Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
On today's show, Total Reboot co-host and standout comedian on Question Everything, Alexi Toliopoulos, joins me to review the new Marvel flick, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. My name is Justin Hamilton, and calm down, mate. I'm not dead. It's just a performance. Now get down here and play along. Here on Big Squid. Thank you for swinging by and listening to our third podcast for the week. Today, we're bringing in Alexi to discuss the Shang-Chi movie. We saw it on the first day that the cinemas reopened. We were way too excited, way too giddy to get back to our happy place. And we recorded this podcast probably less than half an hour after the film ended. So this is a fresh chat. A really fresh chat about a film we had a very good time in. If you missed it yesterday, I released an episode with one of the stars of the film, the super talented and wonderful Ronnie Chang. And if you want to hear his thoughts about what it's like to make a Marvel movie and how his career is going in the States, it's a great companion piece to this one. This episode is full of spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want to be spoiled, bookmark it, put it aside, come back to us later. But I'm just giving you the warning now because I don't want to ruin anything for you. And I'm thinking about everybody, but I'm particularly thinking about people in Melbourne who probably have not had a chance to see the film yet. So just be careful. I know it's only a movie, but there's just nothing worse than being bummed out about someone ruining something for you. So tread carefully. But, you know, maybe if you're on the fence and you're not sure if you want to see the film or not, maybe this podcast will help you lean in one way or the other. By the way, on Tuesday, we launched the new season with Ben Elwood and I, kicking off our David Lynch series with his first film, Eraserhead. It has been a big week. Like, you take a few weeks off and then you come out running hard. Three episodes. It's been a big, big week. And we are rapt to be back here with you. We now also have a Patreon where you can sign up and receive all types of bonus material from scripts to one-off podcasts. We've already had a bunch of people sign up already. It's really lovely considering we just launched. So if you would like to check it out, head over to Patreon, Justin Hamilton Big Squid, and you will be able to find us there and hopefully find a tier that suits you. I've tried to keep it as cheap as possible. I know times are tough, so we've tried to keep it in a ballpark that's not too full-on for anyone. One of the benefits or treats of signing up to the Patreon is that you get a podcast shout-out, all your own. I know that some shows kind of do a readout of names. Well, we're doing it a little bit differently here. Each Patreon gets an episode that goes directly out to them. And this episode, it goes out to Matt Diagon. Is that correct, Matt? Diagon? Maybe it's Diagon. So I did a little check online to get your name pronounced correctly, so I hope I've nailed that, Matt. Thank you very much for signing up, buddy. It is very much appreciated. And look, Matt, I hope you've seen Shang-Chi, because that would mean you're definitely listening to this podcast sooner rather than later. But if you haven't seen the film, you might be avoiding this for spoilers. So if anyone knows Matt and they know that he's avoiding this episode because he hasn't seen the film yet, just, I don't know, tell him to listen to the first few minutes so he knows he's got a shout out. Either way, thank you very much for signing up, Matt. This episode's for you. All right, I'm ready to get to the fun stuff. We'd better bring in Alexi so we can discuss the complicated life of Shang-Chi, who must confront the past he thought he left behind when he's drawn into the mysterious Ten Rings organization. This is Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Hey, can we get real for a second? We've been friends for 10 years. I know that you don't like to talk about your life, but a guy with a freaking machete for an arm just chopped our butts in half.
DJ Snake.
Who are you?
Run it.
Only talking, making major moves.
My father trained me to be the Ten Rings' greatest weapon.
On the road to riches, I can never lay around.
But that's not who I am.
I got my back against the wall.
How did you find me?
I always know where my children are.
Be against the world, I got my back against the wall.
Seems like a nice fella.
It's time to show the world.
No, I'm hellbound. But I'm well now.
Who I really am.
No one will ever stop.
Come on! Oh, hell no! I'm not doing this!
You are a product of all who came before you.
If I die, it's your fault.
Man, you leaving town. Say you're married to the game and I just hit a money guy.
I must stop him.
Hell yeah.
Looking fresh and feeling like a million. Run it. Run it. Run it. Run it. Never hear me. If you got a problem when you see me.
Run it.
Tell me, show you what we can do. Tell me, show you what we can do. It's only talking, making major moves.
My name is Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi.
Shang.
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 S-H-A-N-G. Shang.
That's what I said. Oh, you can turn it up? Yeah, you can hear me.
Run it.
This has been the first time we've seen a movie together in a long time. We are recording this on the day that Sydney opened up again and we went to the cinema. And before I get into anything, we walked back from Palace Central to my place, and it's been tough because I didn't want to talk until we had the microphones.
Yeah. We've said words to each other regarding the film. We've said characters' names, yes, and we have said the names of actors,
yep,
and then nodded after the name, yep, has been said. That's probably the closest we've got. And full disclosure to the listener, I had to run and pee straight away. My stamina is not what it used to be, right, apparently.
Yep.
And I had to go... Justin did tell me the two...
after-credit scenes?
Yeah, the two, yep, post-credits. He did tell me about it, but I made the choice. I was like, I need to make a choice.
Mate, I knocked off a double feature glass of wine, which is two standard drinks and, yep, the 600 mils of water, and I was wrapped with my 49-year-old bladder because it was getting right to the precipice, yeah, and I quickly Googled how many after-credit scenes there were, and all I could think was, yep, this better be one of those films that only has one that's straight after the first part of the credits,
it's,
and it said there's two, there's one right at the end, and I was like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to keep myself busy, distracted, yeah, and then I looked up and they were still on VFX credits, and Jesus, this is another hour.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got to the
you
end
made it.
And then, you know, still managed to keep a level of class, I think, on my way to the toilet. But
it did make me feel strange to be the... As soon as the credits started, I got up. I never do this. I always stay with the credits. Regardless if there's a post-credits or not, I stay for the credits. I want to respect every person that worked on the movie. Right. I want to look at every individual name and soak it in, accept that they did the work and show them the gratitude for making the art that I care about most. The movies, baby.
Yes.
But I got up immediately going, oh, Hammer, I've got to go. And all I could think of, like, everyone's looking at me going, like, he doesn't know that there's post-credits sequence. I'm like, yes, I know. Okay?
Yeah.
I haven't watched a movie where I've been on a pause and get up and go to the bathroom for months.
Months.
I got, my bladder can't handle this anymore.
Mate, you're a Marvel maverick. I don't give a shit about the after-credits scene. Most of you are here just for the after-credits scene.
That's actually what the thought in my head was like, you know what? I don't care enough to see the post-credits scene. To make it out of here.
Like, I've just sat through this 2-hour trailer for the after credits scene, and now I've got to go to the toilet. So the one thing that I've been dying to say to you, like, there's heaps of things that I'm dying to say to you, but one of the things that will come out of left field was, fuck, I loved whoever that dude was who was sitting on our left, who was having the best day of his life.
There was a guy directly behind us to the left that chuckled at every single laugh line.
Every.
And it would be a thing where, like, my head would go, well, that's not that funny. And then you would laugh because of the guy's laugh immediately after. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Then it gets back to me. I'm like, okay, I'm having a good time. Yeah. I'm having a good time here.
I haven't heard any other voice while watching a movie in months as well. Because I've been like, you know,
you got to watch those audio commentaries, mate.
Right.
You got to put a director's commentary on every now and then.
Just so I have a little bit of company. Well, you know, it is, and I'm reluctant to bring this up because it could completely derail the podcast, but as you know, you're a big fan of the movie Saturday Night Fever, and I had not seen it.
Yes.
I finally watched it, and it was, I thought it was in the world of Flashdance in Greece. And there was a moment when a man says, oh, no, I've broken my pussy finger, and I did a double take to nobody.
Yeah, you got to like show them, you guys seen this shit? You guys hearing this shit over here?
We'll save that for a Patreon podcast.
Yeah, we got
you'll love.
I'll come with you anytime to the West Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
Any time of the week.
That'd
Monday,
be good.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The weekend is my business.
Yep.
And then I'll come back on a Monday again.
Right, yeah, no, I wouldn't even think of having you on the weekend. So the character of Shang-Chi, which as we did talk about on our way home, because I followed this, I know this character from when I was a kid. I have said Shang-Chi for fucking decades. So if I slip up, it's Shang-Chi, created by writer Steve Englehart in the 70s. Steve Englehart is a great comic book writer, a little bit left of center. Created lots of amazing characters that you see in the Marvel Universe now. He created Shang-Chi with the artist Jim Starlin, who created Thanos, and Al Milgrom back in December of 1973. It was in a comic special Marvel edition number 15. Had you heard of the character before the Marvel film was announced?
Yes. I had heard just enough to kind of gather what it would be like, you know, back from my comic book days. I would have known a little bit. I'd never read a Shang-Chi novel. I've never read any run. I don't think I've even read like a single issue. So this was like pretty much, for the most part, my introduction to the character beyond like anything else. So you can just glean from being someone who reads comics and hangs out in comic book stores.
So we have not said anything, but one of the things that I found really fascinating about the film that we just watched was I did find it funny, but I was so relieved. I did not find it funny in a Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Taika Waititi kind of way. It had its own sense of humor.
I agree. That's something that I found quite refreshing about it. And I guess also, like, it takes a little bit in that model in its casting, its two leads as, like, comedic actors, like Awkwafina and Simu are largely known as, like, comedic actors. That's what their background is.
Yeah.
And I think that they translated very well for me from them as comedic actors to kind of playing that line of more emotional hero's journey type thing as well.
Yes.
But like with like the lightness of touch of like very contemporary comedy.
Yes. I thought, so the lead's name is Simu Liu. Is that how you pronounce
Simu Liu, I think.
And I thought he was great. Mm. I thought he was really charismatic. Immediately liked the character, yeah. loved the way he handled himself. I thought Awkwafina was the MVP of the movie for me. Her character of Katie was sensational.
Yeah.
And I liked that it was a friendship. And
I really liked that too.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure at some point they will bow to, you know, commercial pressure to make them a couple. But I liked that they were pals. And I thought she was magnificent, and the two of them together was fantastic.
They had great chemistry together. I love the way that they played off each other. Yep. I would say as well, like, because like the Marvel films are so tame and so largely sexless, like muted.
Yeah.
I whenever that there is not any kind of stuff in there, I do prefer that than being like, you know, something like Doctor Strange, where it's like, yes, he's got a girlfriend, okay, he's got a girlfriend.
Right.
But something like this where it's like, no, there's no tension in that regard there. I'm like, yeah, thank God, because it's not going to relieve itself in any way. We're not going to see them like do something really cool together, like have sex with each other. It's not going to happen.
Well,
so I think the friendship makes it like it fits in what they're trying to do a lot more. You know what I mean?
I find I'm very conflicted about that aspect of superhero storytelling because they are essentially a genre that is made for children.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it. It's not that I want these movies to be sexless, but I do want them to be something a little bit more, you know. Yeah. And you know, our friend Ben Elwood, he does not like the movie Logan.
Yeah.
And it's because they swear, and you know, he's just a bit like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, but just watching a guy and a girl be friends was a real refreshing experience.
Mm, and especially because they're close friends. And the thing that I really dug about it is the, like, because there's this cultural aspect to this movie as well, in that it's like Asian migrants in this part.
Yep.
I think I really appreciated like the, like how grounded their friendship is in like their diasporic community as well. Like that's something that I really appreciated in this, and how it developed their character and how it gives voice to their character in a very specific way that is something we've not seen at all in like the Marvel movies. Like the Spider-Man stuff, there's some stuff that gets close there where we're kind of grounded in some kind of actual reality.
Yeah.
But to see something like this, I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense. I understand this world. I understand who these people are in their world.
Yep.
And so when it goes into like this portal fantasy, we've had that grounded reality to really appreciate where the fantasy goes to from that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. The you know, long-time listeners of this podcast know that I'm not really up for a CGI ending.
Mm.
There's a lot of CGI in this ending, but I don't know. I just kind of really was fine with it, and I accepted it, and it felt, it did feel grounded storytelling-wise in very relatable and recognizable characters. All of the characters had a pretty good kind of through line, didn't they? Like even characters that were quite minor, there was, oh yeah, I see how they got from there to there. And I just kind of, I don't know. There was just something about, I think maybe because of the genre of this film, I was, oh yeah, well, now we've got dragons and soul eaters flying around, and that's fine because this is probably where it was always going. And I think maybe when I get bored with the CGI endings, it's because it feels a little like, how are we going to end this?
Yes.
Oh, something big. Something big falling down.
Something big. I agree with you. Like, what I really loved about this movie, and I think why I would compare it favorably to a lot of the MCU, is I am a sucker for portal fantasy movies. Like, or any portal fantasy story, like from your Narnias to Alice in Wonderland to The Wizard of Oz, where someone goes from, like, the naturalistic real world.
Yeah.
In quotations,
yeah,
and then goes into a fantasy world through some kind of portal, whether it be a platform 9 3/4 or a wardrobe or, you know, a board game or something like that.
Yeah,
these are the kind of things that I really love, that where we go into an imagined fantasy world. I think with this, because it lands so successfully into that genre,
yeah,
where And it's difficult because the Marvel Universe already has fantastical things in it.
Right.
So, you know, we see some stuff early on, like there's like a hulking type character, you know. I don't know how else to describe it, but there's
That was the Abomination from Incredible Hulk.
Oh, was it the actual Abomination?
Yeah.
Tim Roth.
Well, it was definitely the Abomination, so...
It could be the Tim Roth... So it's the Tim Roth Abomination.
Yeah, well, that's what it...
oh, gosh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we see that earlier on. So we know that there's like already like fantastical shit going on in this world. But then to go into the imagined world of... What's the village that they're called? The fantasy world that they're going to?
I can't remember what that was called. I'll have to look that up. Yeah. I haven't had enough time to...
we are hot off the cinema.
Like, we are. We literally walked in, I poured us both a glass of wine, and we sat down.
Yeah. So when we go into that fantasy world, because I think it so successfully creates a whole new... A whole new imagery for what is going on. Like, this is a new fantasy realm.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many different creatures that are quite exciting to see.
Yeah.
The world looks a little bit different. Like, it doesn't have this typical geography that we're used to in this film and the MCU as a whole. That I think because it so successfully creates, like, fantastical beings.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I fully accepted the CGI battleness towards the end.
Yeah, well, you know, it does a good job of kind of going back and forth in the story. There's a little bit of it's a fairly linear movie, but it has little flashbacks here and there that kind of fill in things nicely. Funnily enough, you know. And we'll get to him properly in a sec, but the Trevor Slattery character, when that little what does Katie call it, like the little, like the furry bum thing, whatever,
a little pig chicken or something,
pig chicken, whatever that little creature is, like having that little thing pop up allows you to, when you finally get to the place that they're going, you go, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I've already seen that. I've had a taste of that. So,
I accept it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the world building is quite wonderful. And I think it'll, I think it's probably up there with the, I think the Wakandan world building is exemplary.
I would say that, to me, Black Panther still, I can't imagine it ever really changing, is like the actual gold standard for the MCU, where I think that's a fantastic movie, not just like a great movie in the Marvel universe. Like, I think that's, to me, every aspect of it, every department is on fire.
Yeah.
From the cast to the production design to the score, I think that is the one where I go, everything's on fire on that movie. That's a great film.
You know, and I know so many people that think it's really boring and not great.
No
and
way.
I'm like, I reckon... Like, you're wrong.
Yeah, I would agree. I really think that is genuinely a fantastic movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And
with a properly, like, out of control antagonist in Killmonger, where
absolutely.
Like it's rare, and the casting of Sterling Brown and Michael B. Jordan, like it's not often you get to the end of these movies and you go, I kind of don't think he's wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
that's for me why I like it, because compared to most of the others, it's one of the few that has like a thematically resonant like subtext to it as well.
Yeah.
Whereas I find these films genuinely lack a lot of that.
Yeah.
I'm quite hard on the Marvel films. Like, I don't really get excited.
Yeah.
But to the point where after Spider-Man ending of that phase, I was like, you know what? I might put the pin in it here.
Yeah.
I don't feel the need to truly continue, kind of over it. But lo and behold, every single one since then that they've announced or is coming up has come out now.
Yeah.
There's always at least one aspect that gets my little cinephile ass a little bit excited for what's going on. And I would say the element in this film is by far...
Ronnie Chang.
Well, one, that's, you know, getting someone that I admire and respect for my own personal life, yes. But the actual thing here, which is casting of Tony Leung, one of the greatest movie stars in the history of cinema, and the greatest stars of international cinema, and one of the maybe five most handsome people to ever grace the earth.
Yes, right. Who are the other four?
Oh, you know, a couple of them in this room, perhaps. But I would say That was the one where I'm like, you know what? I'm 100% seeing this movie as soon as I can in cinema. Because I cannot even... I've seen so many of his films.
Yep.
I cannot think of one big Hollywood movie that he's done.
Right.
Like, he has really not done, like, Hollywood films. Like, Hero is probably the biggest, most successful mainstream-ish movie he's done, which the kind of wuxia film.
Yep.
And when they cast him, I was flummoxed. I couldn't believe that they got freaking Tony Leung, the legendary Tony Leung, to be in a Marvel film.
Well, like, you know, I'm reluctant to make any grand statements considering we are half an hour out of the cinema, but... I put his character up there with Killmonger.
Yes.
Like I had a lot of empathy for the character, even though he's a bad guy, and you kind of understood where he was coming from. And
yeah, I mean, he probably is the best actor to ever be in a Marvel Cinematic Universe film.
Right.
I'm trying to think, and the closest I can come to Jeff Bridges and
ones
in this movie, Ben Kingsley, I would say, like, probably the best ones in there.
Well, that Jeff Bridges, like, have you read about what it was like filming that and where, like, they were ad-libbing heaps. It was Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
There was barely... From all reports, the script, you know, like, I think, and Jeff Bridges wasn't saying this in a bad way, but it was a little bit student movie, you know? Mm. So I think, you know, because he's the fatal flaw of the majority of Marvel movies is killing off the villain.
Yeah.
Or like, you stop killing him off. Yeah. Like, you know, and the Jeff Bridges character would have been great to keep around.
Yeah.
And so the character that Tony was playing, his character was originally Fu Manchu.
Okay.
So, in the comics. So, what happened was Shang-Chi was spun off from novelist Sax Rohmer's licensed property as the unknown son of fictional Fu Manchu.
Oh, wow.
What happened was they... Engelhart and Starlin originally pitched the idea to DC Comics, and what they wanted to adapt was the TV series Kung Fu.
Yeah, cool.
And then DC wasn't interested, believing the show and the martial arts genre popularity would fade away.
Oh, boy.
And so they took the idea, good work, and so they took it to Marvel, where Marvel owned the rights to Fu Manchu and insisted that the ideas be combined.
Yeah.
And then... when Marvel lost the rights to Fu Manchu, Shang-Chi's connection was underplayed, and then they changed the father's name to Zheng Zhu. And, you know, that's kind of how you end up with this character. But it's funny, isn't it? As I get older, I really believe restrictions are a great thing to have for creativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because otherwise it's like, I'm doing all these ideas, and then you're looking going, that's a mess.
Yeah.
But when you have...
You've got the structure there, limitations in place.
Yeah. His character was like easily one of my favorites in a long time.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just beautifully performed.
Yeah.
I've never not believed a thing that he said on screen.
Yeah.
And I think that's like one of his most impressive traits as an actor. He's also really great... nuanced facial actor.
Yes.
Like, you know, George Clooney always comes to mind when I think about, like, facial actors, people that are in complete control of their face. And I think that he is, in that regard, more subtle and nuanced than a George Clooney type.
Oh, than, like, just about anyone, right?
But it still reads. Everything he does reads. Whether, like, in the climactic battle where he kind of... you see him being confronted by his ideas.
Yes.
That he's got it placed in his mind that are so steadfast, where he truly believes that what his mission at hand is and what his motivation is. And you see that begin to finally be questioned directly to him, and him having to kind of interpret that into information that is being given to him.
Yeah.
You truly see every little thing on his face, and it's like he's doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah. So you know where it is beautifully realized is really early in the film. I've just done a little look up at Tay Lo is where they're trying to get. Mm-hmm. That's the his character is you know, he's got these 10 rings that make him all powerful. Mm. Nobody knows where he found them from.
Yep.
And he's devastated the world for centuries and just done whatever he wanted. And he wanted to go to this one place, Halo.
Yeah.
And that's where he meets the love of his life, who is, I think you pronounce her name, Leiko Wu.
Mm.
And their fight scene is the lovemaking scene.
Yeah, it's graceful. It's beautiful.
And you watched all the way through that fight, you watch him fall in love.
Yeah.
Or you watch her fall in love as well.
This is why I truly think it is very fortunate that he did this movie, but also why I would say it is up there with Robert Downey Jr. as far as like the most superb casting choices they've ever done.
Yeah.
Because they're actors and movie stars, they bring a baggage to whatever role they play.
Yeah.
And when you've got an undeniable movie star like this, where there's like a cultural baggage to what they bring, it needs to either subvert or be in aid of the character.
Yeah.
And to have someone that has been in so many of like the modern wuxia films like this, what's the one, Ashes of Time, the Wong Kar-wai film,
right,
and the Grand Master, where he plays the Ip Man.
Yeah.
I think that I really don't think there is another actor that could have done this. Like, if you go for someone like a Jet Li, who is also like a background in like martial arts films and stuff, and wuxia films, if you get him, you'll be like, okay, I get that aspect. But then there's this profound romantic quality to Tony Leung that no other actor on earth possesses, where he has been in like some of the most sensual romantic movies of all time, like In the Mood for Love and 2046 and Chungking Express, where he is able to like embody both aspects of this character as being like someone who has been around for 1,000 years and battled all these things, but then also be able to create like the power of the romantic nature, the romantic relationship that is like the entire spine of this movie, and like what the entire motivation and crux of the film is this romantic relationship where he's lost the love of his life and everything is motivated by that. I don't think there's another actor that could play both those aspects while also bringing the entire cultural baggage to make it seem endless in time the way that he's able to do. Yeah, that's why I saw the movie.
Because
of him and like, and I needed to see that. And I gotta tell you, they made it work.
Yeah,
they made it work. And I would, you know, it's not the best role he's ever had in his life.
No,
but he's done one of the best things that's in this saga. You know,
well, you know, he's acting. You know, you're so correct in that what he nails early on in the film with that character is, it allows you to accept what happens at the end. It's not a tacked-on ending.
Yeah.
Once again, it's similar to the Killmonger thing, where it's like, there is a forward momentum that makes a lot of sense as to why this is happening right now. Mm. And I can understand how we've gotten there. You know, I know it's only a Marvel film, but emotionally, I understand how we've reached this point. I can understand why his son and daughter have turned against him.
Mm.
I can understand why they don't buy into what's happened to him. I can understand why he's fallen back into his ways, you know. And look, you know, when you hear Marvel is doing Shang-Chi for Phase 4 and you're sitting there going, okay, like, I see what you're trying to do. They're very smart people. Like, Kevin Feige is the biggest genius in movies at the moment, regardless of whether you like Marvel films or not, with what he's doing. And
business,
it's like,
and storytelling genius, minding, bringing the two together. Yeah.
And like, I kind of think, imagine you're a kid and you see this because you see the Marvel films. Like, maybe this opens up a whole world of filmmaking that you have never seen.
Yeah, I think as well, I get excited about like the different textures that they bring now.
Yeah.
Because so much of what we're, I guess, looking forward to in this new phase of Marvel, or the new saga, if that's what they're calling it, now that the Infinity Saga is over.
Oh, yeah, the Infinity War.
Yeah.
Now, 3 seasons.
Now that we're in this new phase, new saga, we are moving in that kind of mystical, magical, fantastical realm, which is something that I'm excited about, because I think that I have some fatigue in like the kind of science fiction fantasy that we've been in before, and to kind of change the texture of it, I find really interesting. Between this and, like, you know, Doctor Strange coming down the line, we are moving further into, like, something rather different, that this is becoming a fantasy series rather than, like, a science fantasy series.
Well, it's also interesting where I've watched the stuff on Disney Plus, and I think it's all been, I wouldn't say it's been hit and miss, but, you know, there's stuff that I've liked more than others, etc. But it's interesting because you kind of have this set up with the new Captain America, and there's kind of the grounded realm, but we also have the WandaVision stuff going into the Doctor Strange stuff, which also seems like it will, you know, like we saw Wong in this film, you know, who was hilarious. So, you know, we've got this mystical side as well. We know that they're setting up Kang the Conqueror as, is he going to be a big bad? I don't know. But what's interesting is with Black Widow, which is a prequel, but is a part of Phase 4.
Yeah.
With this film and Eternals, which, you know, as you said to me when we were watching the trailer, I have no idea what the fuck this movie is, right?
Yeah. But had to tell me what the go is with it.
But you know what you can tell from the trailer, which it has in common with the two movies we've already seen, is it's all about family.
Yeah.
And I know the next Captain Marvel film is going to have, I think it's called Marvels, and has a few, I think they're going to introduce the Muslim Ms. Marvel, who is probably one of the great modern characters created by Marvel. She is, she's been written by Muslim writers and artists, and she is she's a lovely character. She's a great character, you know. Like, she is, she... What Peter Parker was to the 60s, she is to, you know...
Contemporary world.
Yeah, okay, along with Miles Morales as the new Spider-Man. So I'm curious to know if that's what we're going to be seeing. There's going to be a lot of world building with all these next Marvel movies, which will all be about family.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where we might be going. I had... So the character of Shang-Chi, when the artist Paul Gulacy took over the comic, Paul Gulacy's a great comic book artist. He used Bruce Lee as the model for the visual appearance, and Simu Liu was, I don't know, I just thought he was a perfect pick for this film. I just, like, immediately, you know, it's like, you know, when you're sitting in the cinema and you go, I like him.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen him in anything at all. I liked him immediately. I think he's fantastically charming.
Yeah.
And I would say it's a huge task to carry a film like this. And I think he genuinely does it. Like, I think that, especially if there's not, like, a movie star behind it, or at least an established character, it's hard to carry that, a film like this. And I really do... I mean, I loved every second that he was on screen. I believed pretty much everything that was going through with him, but also I was felt invested in the character immediately.
Yes.
Especially when you kind of realize one of the things I anticipated going into this film was that it would be an origin film in the truest sense, where we're going to discover the world through his eyes.
Right. But instead, we discover it through Katie.
Exactly. We discover it through the eyes of Awkwafina. So that was something that I was excited by, that it wasn't going to just be like, he's going to find out about the legend of his family. It's like, no, he knows all that.
He knows.
And it's been hidden. And the way that it is revealed is so... That first fight scene... On the bus. I absolutely loved it.
So I
was so in. Especially, like, you know, earlier this year we had Nobody, the movie starring Bob Odenkirk.
Yes.
That has a fantastic fight scene on a bus.
Right.
And to see a fight scene on a bus be completely different to that.
Yeah.
In its tone, in its scope, in its style.
Yeah.
I really found this to be, like... a great blend of The martial arts. I like the way that all the fights are shot in this as well, where there's like kind of a fluidity but rigid movement to the camera as well. Yeah. There's something about that I really liked, and it felt a little bit fresh, especially for Marvel. Felt fresh. Like, they also felt more tactile than fight scenes that are usually CGI in these films.
Yes.
And the camera movement felt quite natural, or like real, rather, I would say. And to have a blend with comedy in like a very nice, elegant slapstick way, I found really good.
Yeah.
And it's got a blend between that and the comedy that Awkwafina is bringing with like being trapped in this situation as she's like bearing witness to going like, oh my God, my friend can kick ass. Like, what is going on? I thought I was the one that was protected him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a great introduction to... the subversion that you're going to see in this film, that this is going to be a typical origin story.
Yeah, it felt like a martial arts version of Speed for a moment, and very funny, really entertaining, good, like, good choice on the minor character who's filming it and commenting.
Yeah.
He was really, that was a really funny character.
That's a little character, a comedic character actor I've seen in a lot of things. I can't quite place him, but he must be like a stand-up of some kind.
Right.
See him on like Crashing or something, like TV shows like that.
Yep.
And there are choices in this fight scene that surprised me that I, why didn't I ever think of them? It's like the kind of choices that you make when you're a kid and you're listening to music on like your iPod or something.
Right.
And there's like a cool song on and you just imagine what the fight scene you could do in this scene, in this location would be. And because they're in an accordion bus, having the accordion bus play a part in, you know, it being... I don't want to ruin it for people that haven't seen it. But
In the intro, I'll let everyone know this is full of spoilers.
But when the accordion bus is sliced in half and they use it to like put to jettison like the villains, I was like, that is great. That's a child's mind at play in like creating a cool action sequence.
So I just looked up. This is this character is played by an actor called Zachary Cherry, and he was the same character was in Spider-Man Homecoming, which only ever watched once. It's weird. Both Spider-Man movies I really enjoyed when I saw them, and have never watched them again, which is what I'm aligned with a lot of Marvel films.
Yeah, the first one I've seen a few times. I love it.
Yeah.
I would put it... I'm a big Spider-Man guy. I love Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And
he's a great character.
I think it's great. Like, it's kind of what I see. It's when you watch it, you're like, this is a Spider-Man movie I've wanted my whole life. You know? I've got two more that I would put right above it in the animated Spider-Verse. I think is proper masterpiece. And I think Spider-Man 2, Tobey Maguire... is up there with Bride of Frankenstein as like the great American sequels of all time.
Right,
I really think it's like perfect sequel. It should be like in the lists and archives of like America's film history because it's important as a sequel.
I like the first film.
Yeah.
I like the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, but the second one has that great moment where his spider sense goes off the car that comes through the window. But that film, like, such a smart move getting Alfred Molina as Doc Ock.
So good.
But, that whole bus scene is so much fun.
Mm.
Katie's reaction to what is going on with my friend. The first time she sees Shang-Chi with his shirt off, and she's like,
"Where's your shirt?
Oh, hello. My friend is fucking ripped."
Yeah. I would actually say that this probably is the best action of all the Marvel films.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else kind of gets close, and tomorrow I'll be kicking myself if I think of something, but
you know,
it's the most exciting, most tactile.
You know, the... this is... this is not a great fucking comment because lots of people would think this, but the Captain America scene in Winter Soldier in the lift is a scorcher.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And it really, like, all the action in that's great, but it's the whole tension and Cap noticing what's going on, and Chris Evans is pitch perfect as that character.
Of course.
Does anyone want to get off?
Yeah.
Before we start, does anyone want to get off?
Yeah.
It's such a fucking cool line.
I would agree. I think that is the closest we have.
Yeah. This stuff is... Whew.
And they nudge against each other, I think.
Yeah.
I think this was one as someone who was about to hop off, I'm glad that I did not take Cap's advice and hop off the lift, and I stuck around to see this one on the big screen.
You hung around.
It probably won't be... It's not going to end up on my best of lists at the end of the year, but that's okay. Not every movie has to.
No, it was heaps of fun.
It was awesome.
So I was glad that I... Like, I watched the first trailer. I knew Ronnie Chang was in it. I lost it. I was like, it is genuinely like... What a thrill to see that young man in a Marvel film. And it's he's so funny.
He's so funny in it.
And he's such an asshole.
Yeah.
He's a real fucking asshole. I love seeing
the costume that he's in. Yes. The freaking his crazy mohawk thing that he's got going on. Oh, man. It made me so happy to see Ronnie in there. And to see him crush it like this as well and keep and retain heat, what makes him funny in it.
Yeah.
Made me very happy and very excited.
Yeah. I liked Shang-Chi's sister as well. Mm-hmm. I thought Zhang Li, I thought she had good motivation.
Absolutely.
Really good motivation. I had no... everything that kind of happened with her was like, yep, I completely understand. You know, the after credit scene right at the end that you missed that nearly burst my kidneys was, you know, she's taken over the Ten Rings, and it's like, okay, well, this is interesting. Are you setting up a series of movies where now it's going to be... It's not just they're the bad guys. Mm. It's family, you know.
Crime Syndicate is—he's in the freaking family now.
Yeah, so good.
I also didn't know Michelle Yeoh was going to be in this movie.
I didn't know Michelle Yeoh was going to be in it either. And I was going to say to you, would you be devastated if you found out that your auntie was Michelle Yeoh, because she's still so beautiful?
She rocks, man. Such a fucking all-time...
What a superstar.
One of the all-time greatest movie stars as well, like up there with Tony Leung. To me, I was like, they got both of these people to be like two of the biggest movie stars? I couldn't believe it.
Oh, I had no idea that she was turning up and the gravitas that she brought.
I just looked it up. She's in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Where is she in that?
No idea. Just
it's so funny. These movies start to...
Mm-hmm.
I've only ever watched that once.
Yeah, I did like that one a lot, though.
I liked it.
Maybe she's a post-credit sequence that I just don't remember at all.
Yeah, maybe. It's funny. These movies are... Like so many of the Marvel movies, I really enjoy the first... Like, and then just don't really have any urge to go back to them for whatever reason. A couple of other... cameos, which I was super excited about. Razor Fist, great character's name. If you don't know who Razor Fist is, he's missing a hand, and guess what he's got there? A razor.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. That was that's the actor Florian Montino, I think. He is in Creed 2, and he's really
Drago's
good in that.
Son.
He's Drago's son.
Yeah, the son of Drago.
And... So I was rapt to see him. I thought he was good in this as well. He got a nice little funny moment too. But a character that I have had no time for, because it's probably in like the bottom percentile of Marvel films, is Ben Kingsley as Trevor Slattery in Iron Man 3.
I actually disagree with you on both counts. I think Iron Man 3 is one of my favorite Marvel movies.
See, it's just, I'm just not a massive Shane Black fan.
I am up and down on Shane Black, but I like that it feels like a something. At the time, I really loved it because it was like, oh, there's something a little different on going on in this movie when I had fatigue of Marvel films.
Yes.
I like that it has an individualistic voice. I like what they do with the character of Iron Man. And I loved the fake out with Ben Kingsley.
I don't. I think the fake out for me feels like... It feels like a bully pulling a fake out.
See, I like the bullies. I'm a bully myself. So
no, you're not. Stop it. But that's interesting. So, but I have to say, I loved Trevor in this.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Oh, my God. Ben Kingsley, like, nailed it. And to the point where right at the end when you think he might be dead and he's not, he's just acting, you go, great.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, that was redeemed for me. And did it redeem it for you because you liked it, but did you enjoy this iteration?
It for me, there were points I go, this is still going on. I'm like, I don't need this going on.
Yeah.
But it would always in turn delight me. He would always have like the perfect, like an actually funny quip of some kind, or like something that's funny in the character that just worked for me to keep extending the gag that he was around.
Yes.
Because it was almost like a little on the nose when Tony Leung was explaining like someone stole my image and appropriated my... I was like, oh God, shut the fuck up. People care about this shit still that there was a fake out Mandarin. Yeah. I'm like, God, get over it. But then to have him in there, like, yeah, okay, you've won me. You've won me. You've earned that fucking scene because it's funny that he's here.
I thought the scene was clunky as well. And then I realized, oh, no, you're just reminding people and and it's fine.
That's it. Because I thought it was like they were atoning for something that happened 10 years ago that like fans won't shut the hell up about that they ruined a Mandarin or whatever.
But yeah, but
it worked.
This is the thing about... like it's one of the things that will be eventually the end of the Marvel Universe in cinema, which is continuity.
Yeah.
And it is the thing that has ruined comics because they weren't designed to have continuity. Mm. They were children's entertainment.
Exactly.
And then over time, and you know, pretty much it's Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, the approach to the creation of Mari Severin, the creation of the Marvel Universe where continuity, you know, like as a kid, when you're reading a Spider-Man comic and Peter Parker and Mary Jane are walking along on an autumn afternoon and they look up and they see Thor flying past and Peter thinks to himself, oh, I wonder where Thor's going. And then you read Thor's comic and then, you know, in the corner you can see Peter and Mary looking up as he's flying off. Like, super cool at the time.
Yeah.
But what it does is it breeds a world of fans who just go, well, that's impossible because how could that have happened? Because in this issue, Peter Parker was here, but Thor was meant to be in it. And you go, fuck, you're like ruining life.
And I would say what I liked more about this much more than Spider-Man, Far From Home, is like the connective tissue wasn't feeling like it was completely in service of the greater plot of these films. But I guess that's also because we're right at the start again.
Yeah.
We're establishing things again.
Well, the good thing about Phase 4 is it's clean slate, isn't it?
That's it. And it didn't feel like it was in service to anything greater than just being like the connective tissue of the world. Like, you know, Wong comes in and Ben Kingsley are probably the only two actual pieces of great Marvel continuum here.
And the after credit scene. The other one with Captain Marvel.
Well,
and
that didn't happen for me, so it doesn't exist.
So it doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen to me. But it felt like it genuinely felt a little bit more standalone, which is something that I appreciate a lot more.
Yeah, breath of fresh air, right? Yeah. The actress that played the mum was also, I don't know this actress, Fela Chen. I thought she was mesmerizing, and I really liked her character as well. Once again, I know it's only a silly Marvel film, but you understood why Tony Leung's character...
Yeah. Makes sense.
He fell in love with it. Yeah, it makes sense. All that scene like that where they battle each other was... Yeah, I can see it happening.
I would say also, like, the first probably, like, the prologue of this movie is very cool.
Yeah.
Like, the prologue all with Tony Leung as being, like, the protagonist.
Yeah.
It all works really well and it works very cool.
Yeah. So, there's... I won't keep you too much longer, but there is... So I had this question for you that I'd written earlier because I tried to put down for everyone listening. I tried to put down some stuff so we'd have some structure, not knowing what we were going to experience, right? And Simu Liu had asked about playing the character on Twitter in December 2018 when the movie was revealed to be in development.
I did see this. Yes.
What role would you ask to play in the Marvel Universe via Twitter if you?
Oh my gosh, probably Rhino.
Oh, the Rhino.
Alexi the Rhino.
Yeah,
that's probably what I'd go for.
Because
that's
the
only one
that
I feel like I could pull off in some kind of way.
Yeah, right.
I don't know.
The classic and the big grey suit with the big horn.
Yeah, or the Giamatti style where he's wearing an Adidas tracksuit. I'm like, that I could do. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't think that... Oh God, okay, no. I would love an X-Men maybe I would be, I would love to play Beast. I think I could bring a new take on Beast.
So, yes. So there is a, so the Beast, Hank McCoy's, that character.
Yeah.
Is a long beloved character.
Yeah. One of my favorite characters ever.
Right. So did you ever read him in the, there's in the 70s, 80s, Beast leaves the X-Men and joins the Avengers, and they team him up with the character of Simon Williams, who is the Wonder Man. And the Beast is, by this stage, he's blue and fairy, furry, but he is... he's a real hit with the ladies, always going on dates, charming, really smart because he's a scientist, but also has this agility and power.
Yeah.
Beast is one of my favorite characters as well. And you know what? You would make a great Beast.
I think I could bring a whole new take to the character.
Oh, my God.
Actually, that's one of my favorite superhero castings ever is freaking Kelsey Grammer as Beast in like the bad X-Men movie.
Yes.
I'm like, come on, that's great casting. That's perfect for me.
Right. But Kelsey Grammer is like...
He's like a beast. Kelsey Grammer is a beast IRL.
Yeah, but like Beast is almost George Clooney-esque charming.
God, Beast. George Clooney as Beast. That is, I'd never thought of that. I really like it. I'm taking my hat out of the ring. No.
Clooney's past it. He's not doing these films.
He could be Beast.
Nah, not anymore. No, cameo. I want a younger Beast.
Okay, it's going to be me.
I want one in their 20s.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, who is, and I want at least a decade of your Beast.
Wow, okay. Yeah, I would love... I reckon Beast is the one that I think I could pull off. And you just get a stunt guy to do all the stuff where he's dangling from the roof and stuff like that, or do some trickery.
You know who I could be?
Who would you be?
Cyclops.
Yeah, you could be a Cyclops.
A, get to keep the glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And B, Cyclops is an underrated character who gets like written Cyclops. Poorly often. And
I'm an X-Men guy. Like I love X-Men comics. I barely like any of the movies. And that's why I'm like...
Okay, just quickly.
Yeah.
X-Men 1?
X-Men 1, fine.
It's fine. Like, you know, the thing to remember is there hadn't been a movie like that.
Exactly.
And it was... incredibly thrilling.
Yeah, it's fine. It's got great actors. Anna Paquin, fucking Hugh Jackman. Huge, great performances from them.
Yeah.
You got Magneto. You got freaking Dr. X. They're awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Professor X, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, it was funny when Wolverine's wearing the black suit and, you know, Cyclops is like James Marsden. James Marsden is
underrated.
Thank
underrated. Good comedic foil. I like him.
Yes. X-Men...
X2, X-Men United.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Like, just a little, like, just slightly at the end.
Mm-hmm.
It just wavers a little bit.
Yep.
The scene of Wolverine, was protecting the kids.
Yep.
Like, that was the Wolverine wanted to see on the big screen. Like, all my life.
And Nightcrawler, the introduction to Nightcrawler, awesome. Ooh. X-Men 3, I think I liked it at the time, but I was like 11 years old, so maybe not 11, but you know, young enough to really
that
go,
must,
oh,
that must mean
okay.
I was about 48. So
but then,
but you can feel it losing focus. First Class.
I would say First Class was the X-Men movie I wanted to see my whole life.
Right.
Yeah, I really loved it. I saw it a few times in the cinema.
Yeah.
I think I like it less now when I've revisited in the last few years.
Yeah.
But from being like a childhood X-Men reader, I was like, that's what I've always wanted was that film. And then Days of Future Past, same thing. I really like that a lot as well. And I just watched Apocalypse. Not good. Someone told me, a person I trusted told me it was actually good. I watched it, I go, it's not good. It's
well,
bad.
You need to just... like not
they're flushed they're considered flushed and
they're gone.
I like the Wolverine and I like Logan
what about Dark Phoenix, have you seen it?
No. After hated Apocalypse, I was like, you know what, I'm not going to.
I saw it just because I'd seen all the others
and also,
I can't remember anything.
I don't hate X-Men 3 enough to go to be like, do it again or whatever, and then do it worse, you
it's
know?
The mistake that Sony made with killing off Gwen Stacy in the killing off Emma Stone. Like, You can't keep killing off Jean Grey because you want to reenact the Days of Future Past storyline, because the reason the Days of Future Past storyline hit was and Jean Grey dying was because we had at that stage 20 years of those stories.
Exactly.
And you can't do it in like 3 hours, yeah, 4 hours. So it's like, well, why do I give a shit? Like, you haven't, like, I don't really know this character.
Exactly.
So, so Wolverine Origins.
Oh, it's bad. But I in a way that I kind of dig, because it's such a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, there's stuff in it that I think about all the time. Like, because, you know, it was filmed around the corner from where I grew up and shit, where I went to high school.
Right.
But also, like, Will.i.am in that movie...
Oh God, I never forgot that.
Will.i.am is like, can't even tell you what character he plays.
Yeah.
But he does this thing where he like teleports. He goes, hey, can I catch me? And like hitting people. Yeah. I'm like, always think about that. I'm like, why did he get Will.i.am? Like,
why?
Just awful stunt casting.
Why.i.am.
Yeah. Why am I, dude?
Will.i.am and why am I?
Like that, it's just so much bad casting in that movie.
Yeah. Though it did give us another thing for Ryan Reynolds and Deadpool 2 to go and shoot.
Yeah.
So that's, oh God, that's all great.
Yeah. Taylor Kitsch as freaking Gambit.
Oh, man. Taylor Kitsch, that poor guy. Like,
poor guy.
You
didn't
know.
Didn't stand a chance out there in the world. Doing that.
Battleship. John Carter.
I actually have a soft spot for John Carter.
So do I.
Thought it was going to blow the world apart. Thought it was going to be humongous.
I thought it was fine.
I worked at Disney Channel when it came out. You know how much John Carter merch I just got rid of when I moved house for like the fourth time?
You know.
I used to have John Carter USB sticks.
Yeah.
I reckon my first stand-up session wrote John Carter freaking notebooks. With John Carter pants.
Oh, man. You know, I saw a trailer that a fan made for John Carter that was a... It was perfect.
Yeah.
And it was... It showed all the covers of the original paperbacks.
Yeah.
And it was like saying, before Star Wars, before this. And it just... It gave John Carter context.
They need to do that.
And then Taylor Kitsch puts in a fucking great performance in... The worst season of True Detective.
Yeah.
Like, he's really good in it, but it's a terrible...
What does he even do now? I don't know what he does these days.
You know, he was in... I think he was quite good in a... Playing David Koresh in something.
Oh, well... Whoa,
you know,
okay.
But he's just one of those guys that just has not... And then, you know...
Yeah.
Hasn't had the luck, whereas Jesse Plemons got lots of good things, even, you know, small roles in Spielberg movies and things like that.
Get Taylor Kitsch in a Marvel. Put him as one of the Eternals.
Yes.
Just do it. Deep fake him into it. Give him a shot.
Put him. Give him a crack.
Make him a villain or freaking Captain America or some shit. I don't know.
A few more questions to round this off for you. Does this film make you excited, dejected, or nonplussed for the new phase of Marvel films?
I would say moderately, maybe not excited. I would say,
like,
please me.
A little bit more peaked.
A little bit more peaked, but also, you know, if you've not seen the movie, skip ahead. Tony Leung is not going to be in them anymore. So, like, what are they going to do? Get freaking Andy Mack or something in there? I don't know.
Well, yeah. it is a disappointment to lose that character, but, you know.
Yeah.
It is a mystical place, so there's a potential to bring him back.
Whenever I say I'm out, they always pull him back in. There's always going to be a little cinephiliac treat in there for me. Like, you know, Sam Raimi's directing one. I'm like, okay, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Like, Kate Shortland doing Black Widow. I'm like, okay, great. Yeah. They got an Aussie filmmaker that I'm excited to see get to the next level.
Yeah.
What's his name? The director of this film, Destin Daniel Cretton. Yeah. I really like Short Term 12, another film that he made.
Yeah.
That was like a big indie when I was like coming of age. I was like, oh, that's a cool guy. So, you know, there's always going to be just enough something exciting. Will I see Eternals? Don't know, actually. Even though I liked Nomadland by Chloe Zhao, I don't know if I'll see Eternals.
Yeah.
But, you know, and like you said, in the similar, Angelina Jolie, has there been a bigger movie star in these Marvel movies? Not really.
Like, she's a proper superstar.
Proper. So I would like to see what they do with her, especially, like, her persona suits a role like this. So I want to see how they use or subvert that.
So the trailers have been deceptive, have been quite... underwhelming from a storytelling perspective. You know, as you said, I hadn't really thought about it, but I had felt a little bit underwhelmed watching the...
Yeah.
And I only watched it once, but then watching it again, and you said, I don't even freaking know what's going on. I was like, oh, yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
Like, if these movies, literally from what I can feel, gauge on them, if they're just going to go, well, these are these all-powerful beings that have been on Earth, and here's why they didn't do anything during the Avengers stuff...
Yeah.
I'll be like, what the... why do we need this movie then?
That's, you know...
That's the whole film is going to be them going like, well, here's why we stood out of this problem.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this? Do we need a movie where these all-powerful elite beings stand by and do nothing?
Yeah.
Do we need that?
Well, I don't know. Like, I haven't seen the film.
Yeah.
Like, but in the lead-up, I don't know. But I do... You know, I'm curious about Angelina Jolie. I do like Barry Keoghan. I do like Richard Madden. I don't really give a shit about Kit Harington, but he is playing a character
that
I like.
He's in it.
He's playing the Black Knight, who was a character I liked in the comics.
I would say that if this movie is as big a hit as all the other Marvel movies, it shows that they're kind of... they can't do... wrong box office wise.
Right.
That it's just such a titan that's always going to get bums in seats because it's got the MCU attachment.
Yeah.
Because to me, I see this trailer, I go, if there's no MCU, this is a stinkeroony bomb waiting to happen.
This could be it.
This reads flop to me, but I know that's going to make $1 billion. It's going to make so much money. But if it didn't have MCU, Disney, Marvel at the top, I would be like, this is a flop of a John Carter level, waiting to happen. Like, why are you making this movie?
Right.
But it won't fail. It's impossible for this giant to fail.
Well, you would have said that about Star Wars until Solo. And Solo...
I liked Solo as
well. No, but it didn't...
Yeah.
Did you like Solo?
Yeah, we saw it together. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. I might have to watch it again.
I've seen it 3 times, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I would put it as up there. I liked it a lot.
I didn't dislike it, but I can't really remember it.
There's 2 Star Wars movies I like a lot less than it, and they've both come out in the last, like, 10 years.
Yeah. You're just like, oh, God, we stayed too long at this party. My theory on... I would, you know, this problem with... we had this big event. Why weren't all these other characters around? Like, how they're going to bring the X-Men in is fascinating to me.
I wonder if they're just going to start new, go like, oh, now people are mutating. So,
you know, that's probably how I'd do it. Because, like, this movie's set in 2024. You know, this is set in the future. A couple of quick things before we go. Did you have a moment where you're going... after watching The Leftovers and loving it so much, isn't it funny to have had a... you know, the blip in Marvel, and people just say, like, to me, it's really funny. They just go, we live in a world where people can just disappear. Yeah, that's full on. And then they just keep moving. It's like, I feel like you should be talking about that more. I feel like you should all have a bit of PTSD. Yeah. I feel like this is an aspect of the Marvel universe that, you know what, with all your little fucking Disney Plus things, this is the thing that you need to explore.
I think in Disney Plus, they should explore it there. In the big movies, we got to move on. We can't deal with this forever.
But it could be... it could be a motivation. It could be a motivation. I would set up a whole new phase of films or section of films, and I would set them in the 70s. And I would put Daredevil there. I would put Iron Fist.
I like this.
I would put Luke Cage. I would lean into that blaxploitation. That this is where Shang-Chi was originally from.
Yeah.
So you can't have him there. But you could have this world... you know, Daredevil's much more interesting in a world where we don't have the technology that we have today. That's what I'd do.
Yeah.
We got to see our friend Ronnie Chang in a Marvel film. Which of your friends would you like to see in a superhero movie?
Wow.
And which character would they play? And how would you like that film to play out?
Wow.
I know that's a big question, but
question.
I would have given you a heads up, but I thought of it at the last second before I left.
Okay. Well, you know, my best friend, Cameron James, I think Cameron James is such a great actor, and I always think that he has, like, the leading man potential for something like this. And I would love to see Cameron... God, who would I like to see him play? Because I always think Cameron could do a Kurt Russell thing eventually. I think he could do a Kurt Russell in a more comedic vein or some kind.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or...
oh, no, yeah, I reckon there's a... you know, Cam is really smart, really funny. He doesn't suffer fools.
Yeah.
You can see sometimes in his eyes when he's looking around, he's not trusting everyone in the room.
Exactly.
Quite skeptical. That is a compliment.
Exactly.
But I like that skepticism.
Skeptical. Yeah. Probably Jessica Jones, I don't know.
He'd be Jessica Jones. No, who would Cam be? Cam would be interesting. Hang on, to get the ball rolling, I would have Ben Elwood as Benjamin Grimm, the thing.
Wow, yeah, Ben Elwood as either Ben Grimm or Wolverine, the Bob Hoskins style original Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, the short. Yeah, everyone forgets that Wolverine's meant to be 5'3".
But Ben Grimm, I would love that. Well, yeah, what about Cam as the freaking Human Torch?
Oh, yeah.
Because he's got that flamey head already. He's got red head.
Oh, yeah, but he's like, Johnny Storm is like literally a hothead. You know, like is Cam a hothead?
He could be. He could be a hothead. He could be. Yeah.
This could be the thing that he's waiting for. Mm-hmm. Any last thoughts before I let you go?
You know what? Good movie. I'm glad I saw it in the cinema.
Yes.
I think my final thoughts would be... Well, you know, there's only one thing, aspect of the movie that I cannot stop thinking about, which is Tony Leung. And I've said it a lot already on the podcast. But I would say more of that. Like, more of... When Marvel gets a casting choice really right, they get it really, really right.
Yeah.
And I would like to see more of those that either utilize movie stardom for something... Like, I think Cate Blanchett is one of the best actors that they've ever had in the franchise, but then I don't think they utilize her almost at all, really. I like that someone like Tony Leung or Michael B. Jordan or Jeff Bridges, it utilizes their movie stardom in a way to create something that either subverts or plays with it. So I do want to see more movie stars in these films.
Yeah, that's funny. Cate Blanchett is fun, but that's all she gets to be, whereas Tony Leung gets to be a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I hope, you know, it kind of looks like there is... you haven't watched the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but there is a character that... Julia Louis-Dreyfus is playing.
I just saw her in Black Widow.
Yes.
And when I found out she was in Falcon and Winter Soldier, I was like, that makes it actually more appealing for me to watch.
Yes. That's my least favorite. I reckon the What If cartoon has not been...
I watched a few episodes of What If cartoon and I was like, this is so depressing, because every What If is like, what if this guy that you like is dead?
It's such a great idea, and I just thought they didn't do a very good job with it. I really liked WandaVision. I liked most of Loki, and
I forgot that happened.
I liked some of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but it looks like she's kind of like being an evil female version of Nick Fury, and getting together a... You know, maybe she's getting together the Masters of Evil, or it's going to be a Thunderbolts kind of thing. So maybe they can bring, you know, it's mystical. Maybe they can bring Tony Leung back to join a team of bad guys.
Okay, cool.
So that would be nice. But I have to be honest, I was excited to be at the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
I was excited to be out of the house.
Yes.
And I actually had a really good time in this film.
Me too.
Like, I thought it would be good.
Mm-hmm.
I think all the Marvel films, to a certain extent, are good.
Yeah.
But I would put this in the upper 10%.
I would say in the upper mid section.
Yeah,
because there's some that I feel transcend, like a Black Panther transcends.
Yes.
I actually feel that way about Infinity War, even though I really don't like the Endgame.
Yeah, why don't you like Endgame?
It's so long, and and to me, Infinity War was it passed all the challenges that I had for it, which were bringing all these disparate characters with their disparate tones together, and I thought they did that really cohesively, but enough texture to like go in between them all.
Yeah,
and I was like, Thanos, I didn't give a shit about Thanos.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, how are they going to make Thanos interesting? Then to make Thanos the freaking protagonist of the film, I think that, to me, I was like, that was genius blockbuster filmmaking that pushed what this franchise and what blockbusters can do into another level. And I felt like Endgame did a lot of that for me, which I didn't like.
Do you think that's because endings are notoriously hard to land in TV shows, and so therefore what you're essentially doing with Endgame... See, I think Endgame is pretty extraordinary, but I also don't really differentiate that much between Infinity War and Endgame. I think
I differentiate them greatly. I think they're completely different movies. I think that Endgame didn't understand anything about what I personally, me, Alexis Tolopoulos, liked about Infinity War. But also, it's like, you know, endings suck. Endings are really boring. Like, every trilogies are... And I don't understand why trilogy has become like the default way to tell stories.
Yeah.
Because the third one is always going to be boring. They're always like, endings are boring. Like, Return of the King, great movie, but it's not as exciting as the first two because it's not building up to something. It's like the denouement or something.
Endings, of course that's going to be the way because the middle part of anything is a world of options and endings. They have to be something.
Yeah.
And if they're something, that means... There's a destination now. You have to make a decision.
Exactly. There's a destination now. So there's very few things that can surprise you or whatever in an ending. You know, you look at Star Wars and the early, like, Return of the Jedi, it's a lovely movie. It's a good ending. And then the Revenge of the Sith, because it's not actually a closing, it's not an ending, you know the destination. So whatever it does, it's going to subvert.
Yeah.
And so I like that one a lot.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then Rise of Skywalker... You have to just be like, well, endings are lame. All the exciting stuff's over. It's now we're just in the lame stuff where it's just got to tie everything up. But also beyond that, Rise of Skywalker is one of the worst movies I've seen in the last few years of that level.
And I feel like you're talking it up.
Yeah, true. It's awful. One of the worst movies, I'd say.
I remember I saw that with my mate Craig Egan.
Mm.
We watched it. We left. We went to Cafe de Villiers in Adelaide. Yeah. Big shout out for one third of the Pie-fecta.
Yeah.
We were eating. We were having a drink. We were talking about stuff. And then we got into the car and he dropped me off at my mum's place. And I was like, how weird is it that we've just hung out for an hour after that film and not talked about
it? Yeah. I think it made me a better person because I've been obsessed with Star Wars my whole life.
Yeah.
To have something that just made me care about a lot less really helped me grow as a person, I'd say. To just
Thank you.
I've lost something that, like, you know, I don't need that one big attachment in my life anymore. Yeah. And it's gone.
No, it's good. I'm going to let you go. Where can people find you?
You can listen to me on Total Reboot every week with Cameron James. We talk about movies. Mm. We are currently in October, so we're doing our spooky season. And the miniseries we're doing is called Scream Ages, and it's all about teen horror movies.
Oh, great.
So we've done Scream. We're going to do Lost Boys, Jennifer's Body, It Follows, some of the big and interesting and exciting teen horror movies of all time.
Well, this is coming out this Thursday, and we're starting, Ben and I are launching within this podcast the sci-fi series.
Yeah.
And we're launching with 2001, which is great because now I can finally listen to you guys talking about 2001, which I had to avoid.
Yeah.
Because I needed to make sure I was clean and fresh before. Yeah. So I'm going to go back and listen to that as well.
We just did a miniseries that we called Man vs. Machines where we talked about like huge icons of sci-fi.
Yeah.
So we did The Terminator, we did 2001 A Space Odyssey, we did RoboCop, and we did The Matrix.
Yeah.
And a lot of those are my favorite movies of all time and the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
And they're very silly conversations around them while also trying to get deep into the thematics of like what we are trying to do in telling. I think with the miniseries format that we do now, we really always try to have a question that we're trying to get to, which is always, why do we tell stories in this genre?
Right.
Why do we grapple with this theme? So we really try to hone in on like, why... There's so many stories where we're trying to grapple with the things that we create.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we try to get to in a miniseries like that.
You know, it's funny, not to preempt it, but we're doing David Lynch films here as well. And we just watched The Elephant Man. And there's a scene where Anthony Hopkins talks about the new types of injuries he's seeing come in. And that are because of mechanical injuries.
Yeah.
And so it's probably something that we've been grappling with from the first time we invented the hammer and someone hit their thumb.
Absolutely.
What the fuck is going on
and
with
actually
this?
Actually, in 2001 Special, you do see that monkey invent the hammer.
Exactly. It all comes together.
Yeah.
Alexi, great to see you.
Likewise.
Ha ha ha.
Thank you to Alexi for stopping by and chatting about the movie with me. You can hear Alexi on his podcast, The Fantastic Total Reboot with the super funny Cameron James. Also, a big thank you to our Patreon member of the episode, Matt DeAgan. Thank you very much for being a part of this rapidly growing community. A quick reminder that you too can have an episode that is all about you by signing up to any of the tiers on the Patreon. To find out more, head over to the site and look for Justin Hamilton - Big Squid. If money is a bit tight, you can contribute to the podcast by leaving a top review over at Apple Podcasts, or word of mouth is always the best bet. However you feel like you would like to contribute, please feel free to do so. I'll be back next week with two new podcasts. On Tuesday, Garth Jones returns with his Ozploitation segment, Pass the Ammo. Whew, people are talking up this segment. It's a really popular one. I'm getting a lot of great feedback on that. And we're covering the film Wormwood, Road of the Dead. If you haven't seen that film, you can find it on Stan. That's where I watched it. So if you want to get ahead of that, please do so. And join us on Tuesday for Pass the Ammo. And then on Thursday, Ben Elwood and I launch our new series, Space Podyssey, a 10-part podcast where we cover some of our favourite science fiction movies. It has new music, new artwork, new segments, but it is all here on this feed, and we're ripping the Band-Aid off and opening with Stanley Kubrick's masterpiece, 2001, A Space Odyssey. As I said on Tuesday, you either start with 2001 or you wait for episode 2001, and I just don't reckon we have that kind of patience. So we thought, well, let's just open big. Okay, thank you very much for hanging out with me. Let's finish with a quote from acting legend Michelle Yeoh. "It can only be true love when you enable your other half to be better, to be the person they're destined to be." What a great week. So, so happy to be back with you. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.